Gaurko suelta laoiako elkarrizketarako Margua Arsanios artista daukagu. Libanoko jatorria duen artistak mundu osoan egindu lan eta gaur ostirala Artin Museoan aurkeztuko du bere obra berria Who is Afraid of Ideology izenekoa. 2017an abiatua bazen ere, gaur egun 2025ean jarraitzen du kapitulu berriak kaleratzen. Pieza dokumental sail bat da. Eta aurkeztuko digun pieza bosgarrena da Rite of Passage izenekoa. Lurra nola berreskuratu eta ustiatzen den ikertzen du. Emakume komunitate ezberdinen ikuspegitik, egitura patriarkalari nola aurre egiten dioten modu ezberdinak aurkezten dizkigu. Ikuspegi ezberdinak, ekologikoak, feministak, indigenak eta dekolonialak uztartzen dira, gizartea antolatzeko modu berriei forma emateko. Margua teknika narratiboa garatu du dokumentalaren ohiko formatua deseraikiz. Irudia eta soinua elkarrengandik bereizten ditu. Eta mundu ia osoan egonda tokipila batetan egin ditu lanak bai bere lanaren aurkezpenak. Utrecht, Bratislava, Londresen, egonda baitere Beirut Art Centerren, Rotterdamen, Berlingo 11. Bienalan parte hartu zuen baitere eta gurekin daukagu bai Margua, bai Artiumeko komunikazio arduraduna Sonia.
Kaixo zertzatete. Kaixo gunon.
How are you, Margua?
Thank you. I'm good.
Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. We wanted to ask you, first of all, you've titled this work you were presenting today, Who is Afraid of Ideology? You've been working on this since 2017. My question is, why afraid of ideology? Does everybody have this kind of fear?
Yeah, thank you for this question. Actually, the title was a little bit of a provocation. So back in 2017, when I started working on this series, and the reason why I started working on this series was that I met two members of the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement, Dilar Dirik and Meral Shishek. And I had invited them to Beirut to lead a kind of a reading session. And they decided to translate the text back then of a guerrilla fighter and thinker and writer, Pelçin Tolidan, who is one of the ideologues of the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement. And in her writing, she is developing a lot questions of, or if you like, the ecological paradigm and its relation to the feminist paradigm of the movement. And of course, at the same time, she is a guerrilla fighter and she is armed. It is with the Kurdish movement and specifically also with the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement, it is an armed struggle, as you know. So the title comes from a lot of a long conversation with Dilar, Meral, and Pelçin herself when I went to visit her in Iraqi Kurdistan. As they presented to me another type of feminist thinking and another type of ecological thinking that is very much rooted in land and the question of property and the reappropriation of land as a feminist struggle, but also as a feminist struggle that is kind of a adhering to certain criterias of liberal feminism, or if you like, what is known as white feminism, that is always presenting itself as nonviolent. It is a struggle that is very much, it's an armed struggle. And of course, the movement, the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement, has been criticized for having arms. or holding, you know, carrying weapons by other liberal feminists. But it is a criticism that does not stand because, in fact, you know, there is a question of defense and self-defense and the fight for one's autonomy. So in this particular case, and also like the movement has been criticized as being too ideological. So in this case, the title comes from this sort of a tension between liberal feminism and more radical feminism that is presenting another form of feminism that is rooted, as I said, in the question of land and land reappropriation, and that is not claiming nonviolence for the sake of nonviolence, but that is actually fighting for, you know, for a kind of self-determination, liberation, and autonomy. So it is the title "Who's Afraid of Ideology" is a provocation to this kind of liberal feminists that think that they are beyond ideology. But in fact, liberalism is the ideology of non-ideology, and it has been a hegemonic one since the 90s. So I think there is like a blind spot there where they think that they have, you know, come a long way after 1988 and the fall of the Soviet Union, thinking that, you know, that we are now in a non-ideological era. And in fact, that has been the ideology of the market, the ideology of capitalism, the ideology of liberal feminism, the what is known as like a corporate feminism. So like all the ideology of CEOs and all of that. In fact, that is very much a hegemonic ideology. It is Who's Afraid of Ideology is a sort of a teasing or a provocation to this very specific ideology, and presenting, on the other hand, a more militant feminism that is decolonial and thinking about, you know, ecological questions, thinking also at the same time about question of land and property, redistribution of wealth, and also very much, the gender struggle at the center of the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement in this case. I think this is the provocation there.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense then why your work is so extensive in time. You've started working on this in 2017 and you're still working on the same route, let's say. Doesn't it make you afraid in some way?
Yes, it does make me afraid, and sometimes I am thinking, oh, I will do this Who's Afraid of Ideology all my life. So yes, of course, I'm also like a little bit afraid. But at the same time, I think that it is a structure for me to think about at the same time different types of filmmaking and film languages and cinema in relation to questions of land struggle, question of property, and to try to link all of these ideas that are coming from the land itself and ideas that are coming from very urgent ecological questions in relation to also like a reorganization of our life, a reorganization of our world from, you know, like a rooted and coming, emerging from the land itself. And I think that in this case, and in the case of Who is Afraid of Ideology, I think it allows me to think about how the question of, you know, like a reorganization, organizing, the question of collectivity, the question of as well like a new relationship to the land that is one of non-property, that is one of collectivity and collective tending and working of the land, but also a new relationship to a agriculture itself. So I think it allows me to think about, you know, all of these questions that are seems like on a small scale, but in fact they are questions that apply on a planetary scale, and it allows this through film, which is again very important to rethink the question of property, especially if one is trying to understand the history of property. One needs to also think about it through the image, because in fact the history of property is very much connected to mapping, to surveying of land, to all of these colonial mechanisms that plotted parceled land, cut communities, you know, relations of communities with each other in order to commodify land and render it valuable and financially viable throughout the years, and also in order to introduce industrial agriculture, in order to introduce an agriculture for export, not one that is for the local population. And these have always been historically colonial mechanisms. And I think these colonial mechanisms, as I said, are very much linked to the question of image, to the question of a top view of the planet. So I'm trying to go back to a view of the earth and the land from a closer, if you like, view of the soil and the earth and the land. But for this, one needs to think through the image. And this is where I think like the importance of a film comes in, and the way it helps actually as a device, the way it can help us to rethink this relationship to land, and to propose another relationship to land, another possible relationship to land that is one of not only extraction, not only like a surplus production, not only industrial or monoculture, but one that is very much, you know, in sync, if you like, with the land itself and the people who are tending it.
Well, we can surely relate about a lot of things you tell us, because we have similar situation here. Kurdish people have seated here with us too in Suelta la Olla, and they've told us about the relationship with land. But it's a pleasure that you think about the utility of the film as a rethink of our relationship with it. So we will be pleased to go to the Artium Museum and see your art. But give us please some context. This is the fifth part, Rite of Passage. What about the other four? Give us some context. Tell us about the different topics you've worked. And how was the creative process of those?
Yeah. So all of the films are located in specific geography that where people or a community are trying to liberate themselves through a liberation of the land itself, and through like a regaining and reappropriation of the means of production. So, for example, the part one takes place in Iraqi Kurdistan, in the mountain of Kandil, where I met Pelshin, the guerrilla fighter and the writer and one of the ideologues of the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement. And the film is based on a long conversation with her to understand more her thinking. And then, upon her request, I went to the northern part of Syria, that is a self-governed area by Kurdish movement as well. And partly, the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement has reappropriated land after 2011, and when after they have pushed back the Syrian forces because of the a kind of void that happened because of the Syrian revolution as well. So there was a chance for them to push back the Syrian forces and reappropriate the public land that is mostly like a agricultural land, and redistributed over, different cooperatives and communes and infrastructures of agricultural production. And the Kurdish Autonomous Women's Movement have also been part of this larger infrastructure. And there are women's cooperatives, so women-only cooperatives and women-only communes. So the second part takes place in one of these communes that is a women-only village that is also has, like a land that is, used for agriculture. And Pelshin herself is involved in this commune, and she actually recommended that I go and stay there. And in fact, the commune is called Jinwar. It's a women-only village. The third part takes place in the south of Tolima in Colombia. And I worked on it with Samantha Arango from Grupo Semillas. It's a kind of an organization that is working with seed guardians in the south of Tolima and the Norte del Cauca in Colombia. So with Afro-Colombian communities and indigenous Pijao communities from the south of Tolima. And in fact, they are working with seed guardians that are guarding the seeds, the Creole seeds. And in that sense, they're not like preserving seeds in order to build, like, for example, seed banks. On the contrary, completely, they are in their idea and philosophy, they are liberating the seeds. So these seeds are replanted, so they are allowed to be to reproduce on their own. So it's a non-accumulative process. And then they are distributed, around for the community, but they are also used as a way to replant land that is not used, but that is through like a replanting it and reworking it, the land is reappropriated by the community. And so it's an amazing encounter with seed guardians that have deep knowledge of seeds, but also of another type of agriculture. And they are fighting, as you may for sure know, like the most horrible huge corporations that are buying land and just planting them with huge, endless fields of sugar cane or rice. Of course, that sucks all the water from a region that is a semi-desertic region. So the fight becomes about a fight on, of course, land itself, but also it is a sort of a resistance because you see these small kind of farms in the middle of these huge fields that are not building a kind of a network of small farms in order to resist the expansion of the monoculture. And everything is against them, as you can imagine, because, the current government especially that Francisca Márquez is, coming from the Afro-Colombian community of the Cauca. But the previous governments, they are doing business with, North American huge corporations. So the film revolves around this very small entity that is a seed and that is then, becomes the most important and such a dangerous, actually, a small semilla that, that becomes threatening to the big corporation because it is not owned. It doesn't have a patent. And they are fighting against these, intellectual property of seed. Yeah, so the film revolves around that. And the fourth film is about the common, I have been part of this initiative to transform a land into a common. So from private property back to a common. And I have to explain here that in the Levant region, because this takes place in the north of Lebanon. So in the Levant region, historically, meaning like Syria, Lebanon and Palestine, there is a status for land that is not owned, which is commons, like a mashaa. And in fact, this still exists legally. So every village has its common, a legal common. And they are still protected because they are, you know, they have a legal status. And in fact, a common is, as you may know, neither public nor private. So it's not owned. It's beyond any kind of ownership. And I think it's extremely important. It was important that we dig into this history of the commons in order to understand how to actually reactivate it and transform a land from a private property to a common. And this is what we have done. And in fact, the film is about that. It's about this like a reverting a land from a private property to before property or before it was registered as a private property. And the part five, Rite of Passage, is closer to a fiction, but also departing from a law, again, that allows historically a law that gave, you know, like a free passage to animals for the purpose of grazing, actually. So for example, a herd was allowed to cross properties in order to for them to for grazing purposes. So the film departs from that and then explores more this question of rite of passage through the question of dream and narrative and fiction. I think this perhaps gives a bit of an idea about the five parts.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you for this trip around the different communities. It was a great explanation. Thank you. And exploring a little bit more about this work you're presenting today here in Gasteiz, you use the narrative deconstruction technique. We would like to know why. Does it give more deepness to the work, or which is the reason behind it?
Yeah. In fact, I always thinking about the form, of course, of the film. And it's often like the place itself and the kind of a conditions of shooting in the place often define the form of the film. So, for example, part one was shot in, as I said, the Kandil Mountain in Iraqi Kurdistan. And in fact, there we couldn't shoot as we wish because it is a security zone. So I think it was very much like we were directed actually as to what we shoot. And then when you see the film, you see these limitations, the limitations we had and the limitations of the production itself. And the form of the film is very much, you know, a production or like a consequence of these limitations. I think what the question of like a deconstruction and the question of like a breaking down the narrative is always something that actually it's a sort of a device in order to be able to think from like different directions actually. So different directions in terms of like the direction or like the point of view of the land itself, the point of view of the people who are working the land or fighting for the land, the point of view of, you know, the filmmaker that is sometimes a visitor, sometimes a part of, you know, the project of communalization of land. So there is always like these different multi-directional, if you like, point of views. And I think in order to be able to think about, you know, a project or a kind of a politics that include as well like a, the land itself, and that include a kind of a sort of a thought that emerges from the land, one needs to think of a form that is not like a linear form per se, but a more, if you like to call it like a deconstructive form that allows for these multiple directions and multiple points of views. So the earth or the land itself has a kind of a, I don't want to use this terminology of agency or anything, because I mean it's very like a I don't know, new materialism and new age, etc. But I don't mean that. I mean that it's more like a kind of a close listening and a close looking, observing of the place itself, in order to understand how actually and or what form every place give us. If we are in a, for example, if we are in a topography that is a more mountainous topography, if we are in a topography that is more a flat land, like, you know, in part two, if we are in a topography that is militarized, like in part one, if we are in a topography that is semi-desertic and very much the, you know, fighting for the bit of water that is left. And if we are following the seeds, then we are really like following the way or like the kind of a root of the seed in the soil. If we are, you know, like a thinking about the rite of passage, we're thinking about a traveling, or like we're thinking about a shot that follows the animals in their, you know, way of walking across property. So I think that every film has, I mean, every like a, yeah, like a place also gives or imposes even a certain form. And in that sense, I think that one needs to reinvent every time this form. And the I think that the this, sorry, deconstructive, if you like, a strategy allows to open and to open existing forms, existing filmic forms, into something that is much more follows the place itself, follows the topography, follows the geography, the territory, etc.
Thank you for these insights in your work. Thank you for being with us here today. If you let me, I will ask one last question to Sonia to promote the different activities that are being held to, well, to accompany your work in the museum. Perez, Sonia, kontatuko diguzu mesedez, ze dagoen gaur ostirala eta asteburuan zehar?
Bai, hori da. Bueno, lujo handia da Margoaren lana ikusi ahal izatea hemen. Orduan, hainbat duera antolatu dira museotik. Azten gara gaur, ostiralean arratsaldeko seiretan, solasaldi bat egongo da, manaldi aretoan, Margo Arsanios eta Agustin Perez Rubio komisarioarekin, bera izan da erakusketa komisariatu duen pertsona. Eta solastuko dira, ba hori, ordu betez edo. Gero larun batean, larun bat goizean, goizeko amabitan, bertso saio bat egongo da museoan bertan konsoni argitaletxearekin batera antolatuta. Eta gerturatuko dira Usu Alberdi, Sustrai Kolina eta Unai Iturriaga. Saioa berez egongo da apur bat erlazionatuta bai Margoaren lanarekin eta bai konsonik argitaratuta daukan zirriborroak eta gero seriarekin, ez? Eta bukatzeko Margoa larun batean Donostiara joango da, ze mugak arkitektura bienalean biurtekoan itxaldi bat emango du Donostian ere bai, hori arratsaldean, arratsaldeko zazpiretan. Orduan agenda bete-betea jarri diogu astebururako eta bueno, noski gonbidatuta jende guztia Artium Museora gerturatzeko.
Posten gara guztiaz entzuteaz. So thank you once again to both of you, eskerrik asko. It's been a pleasure. We wish great success to your work, which continues, of course.
Thank you so much for hosting us.
Agur.